always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Welcome to the show, Jonathan Williams, Executive Vice President of ALEC. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing great. Third time is a charm. Yeah, I think you guys are doing well.
It's the Friday gremlins or something in our phone lines. Who knows what it is? We've been talking about Medicare and how it is such a big chunk of the Missouri state budget and other state budgets as well. You wrote an article for ALEC about 3 days ago talking about the trade-offs of Medicaid expansion. Can you tell us more about that article, sir?
Well, absolutely. And this is something that you all have lived there over the objections of, I think, the clear thinking, legislators there in Jeff City who wanted to resist this expansion of really Obamacare from the so-called Affordable Care Act, which is one of those like Inflation Reduction Act that is exactly opposite of what the title suggests. But, you know, it's taking up a greater and greater percentage of state budgets in Missouri and other states across the country as they really what Medicaid is really bad health care with horrible reimbursement rates for doctors and hospitals. And then at the end of the day, it's hooking our state budgets and our state autonomy to the wagon of a failing federal government when it comes to this massive debt that we know this is not going to continue in the future. And then the other thing, of course, why I think it's just horrible policy, and we're seeing, 10 states around the country have withstood this expansion of Obamacare now 10 plus years after its passage and affirmation from the Supreme Court, is let's not forget this applies this subsidy of health care, this free health care to able-bodied working age adults, something that is totally removed from the good intentions perhaps when Medicaid was kicked off by the Great Society projects of Lyndon Baines Johnson back in the 1960s, expanded dramatically. And of course, this is a much, much worse fiscal condition federally now with $34.5 trillion of debt. So if I were a state lawmaker, and of course, as you know well, we talk to them every single day as ALEC members, I would worry to think about the reality of the fact going forward that it's not really if, but when the federal government reduces these dollars to the states, do you want to be that state legislator holding the bag when you either have to kick people off of the Medicaid rolls on expansion population, or then there's going to be a huge discussion around tax increases that we know is exactly the wrong thing to do at the state level?
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, Tim here. I've been singing the praises of the Sunshine State all week, the land of liberty and freedom of Florida. I'm on spring break, but I've done a couple shows remotely from down here so I could talk about how great Florida is. And they seem to be doing the opposite of the federal government when it comes to expanding the welfare state, when it comes to expanding government power. They're always looking to expand the people's power instead. Jonathan, back to the piece you were featured on American Journal Radio a few days ago. And then you wrote an article in regards to that interview. And in the subtitle of that interview, Medicaid expansion has put states and their taxpayers in a perilous fiscal situation, relying on federal funds, which will eventually dry up. Jonathan, they are drying up, aren't they? I spoke to our appropriators in Missouri just a couple weeks ago, and they said that the Medicaid expansion in Missouri has put the Missouri budget on an unsustainable path. Jonathan, you and I and others, we warned about this. We were told that we were just crazy canaries in the coal mine. We didn't want to give health care to, quote, poor people. We can now say we told you so, can't we?
It's one of those cases, Tim, that's one of those things that you don't want to be right, but we can say we told you so because we could have seen this coming. We did see this coming more than a decade ago. It's been one of the slowest motion train wrecks in policy history in recent memory that we knew this was going to, like I said, provide bad health care to individuals, provide bad reimbursement rates to providers and doctors. It's not going to save rural hospitals like it's been, promised. I mean, that's been one of the biggest allures for the states as they're trying to bribe the red states that have not expanded Obamacare. Right now is a battle waging in Mississippi on this very front, where you have even some, unfortunately, otherwise really good legislators now pushing this idea to try to save rural hospitals. And as you know well, you've seen it in Missouri and in some of the states that have expanded Obamacare. Mm-hmm. It has done nothing to save rural hospitals. There's broader dynamics at play there that a simple expansion of Obamacare is not going to fix. In fact, when you look at the states that have expanded Medicaid, Tim, you know this, you know, we've seen hospitals in rural areas close in many of those states that expanded. So this is not the panacea as being talked about. And one other thing on this is, you know, there's a so-called third way, the so-called conservative way to expand Medicaid to try to put some guardrails around it. And that's even been a failure. That was, I think, a failure in Indiana, one of the first states to try it. They just reported in the last month that there is now a $1 billion budget shortfall in Indiana's Medicaid program. So much for putting the guardrails on and actually saving taxpayers. I think there's very mm-hmm. little you can do to salvage the feasibility of Medicaid expansion going forward. And of course, you know, that's why I put together the article, because this is still this myth of the free federal dollar. Milton Friedman always reminded us there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Speaking with Jonathan Williams, Executive Vice President at ALEC. Jonathan, looks like the federal government is going to avert a shutdown at midnight tonight. A $1 trillion minibus has been passed. Also making its resurgence has been earmarks. A couple of earmarks I want to give you an example of. The senator from Kansas got $17.5 million for the Eisenhower Library. Senator Lindsey Graham got $11 million for AnMed Health. I assume that's a health care center. And senators of West Virginia, Manchin and Moore, got $15 million for the Charleston Area Medical Center. These are good things, right? These are bringing pork back home to help medical centers and libraries.
Well, you can tell it's campaign silly season and election year in Washington, D.C., when all kinds of even previous, you know, bipartisan agreements about earmarks going away. I mean, let's not forget, for all the flack he took, I think it was, what, John Boehner during the Tea Party movement was the first to say, let's swear off of earmarks. And I think that's something we ought to get back to, because it's clearly not good policy. And it's something that's, you know, it's pork barrel spending is not a good thing for any of our pocketbooks. And especially now that we've fast forwarded from the beginning of the Obama era, where we were less than $10 trillion in national debt, now to fast forward into $34.5 trillion and adding money at a rapid pace. I mean, just the veracity of this increase in recent years, where we now have the interest costs on this national debt skyrocketing to one of the largest line items in the entire federal budget behind Department of Defense, or maybe even in some cases, you know, going above Department of Defense and national security. That is something that's awfully alarming. And these, of course, earmarks, while they're small dollar amounts relatively to some of these bigger programs, something that's a symptom of a much larger issue. And of course, that's the overspending problem that rears its ugly head, especially in these election years.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, before we let you go today, I want to make sure that we give you a second to comment on something that did get across the finish line, at least in the Senate, before we went on spring break last week, and that is an expansion of our education savings account bill. Jonathan, can you talk a little bit about the movement that continues to sweep the country, not only here in Missouri, but across the nation, where legislators are finally listening to parents who want the choice of where to send their of how and where to send their kids in the educational system?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. I mean, this is, we're living in, I think, the issue of our day right now is going to be, are we going to empower parents to make the decisions that are best for their families and for their children? Or are we going to empower, continue to go the status quo approach of having unelected bureaucrats be in charge of those decisions in many cases? You know, I think the answer to the vast majority of Americans is clear on this. I mean, this shouldn't be a Republican Democrat issue. This is the kind of issue that is a broad consensus American issue that parents should be in the driver's seat, outside of maybe the radical teachers unions like Randy Weingarten, who and was with Terry McAuliffe, and you know, that's how we got Glenn Youkkin here in Virginia when they said parents really shouldn't be involved in their kids' education, essentially. You know, this has led to this idea, and Senator Koenig should be commended. I know Representative Ritchie should be commended for all of his work. Great work happening in Missouri and state capitals across the country. And Tim, you know, as we just recently launched our Education Freedom Alliance with our good friend Steve Moore and Alfredo Ortiz, and you're a member of that, and I'd love to, you know, have others that are concerned about education freedom and empowering parents be involved in this, because we are seeing this really this movement shape America, and we are up to now 12 states that have universal school choice in law. I mean, if you go back 3 years ago, Tim, we had zero, basically. I mean, we had the early reforms from Jeb Bush in Florida and Arizona that you could probably count somewhat towards that. But going from roughly zero to now 12 states in the last three legislative sessions is nothing short of remarkable. And we're not content to stay there. We really want to see all of Americans have this opportunity going forward. And that's going to be a big priority for ALEC and our sister organization, ALEC Action, going forward.
We've been speaking with Jonathan Williams, Executive Vice President at ALEC. They can be reached at alec.org. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with you again, sir.
Absolutely. Great to talk with you, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
You too. You